Hello, everybody. Welcome to SOM TV, the podcast. My name is Jason Wise, and I am so tired right now. SOM TV is officially live. We are live. It's up. SOMTV.com. So turn this podcast off. Don't even listen to this. Go to SOMTV.com and start streaming the stuff we have up right now and lots more coming. But if you want to listen to this podcast, I'm going to talk about some of the shows that are up. I'm going to talk about what's coming. And then I'm going to interview somebody by the name of Dave Gibbs, who is a musician who owns a wine shop in Los Angeles. And he's really important to SOM TV because in our show coming up, which I'm about to talk about, called Verticals, he sourced a couple very, very, very tremendously rare bottles of wine that's really important to the episode that the wineries themselves couldn't even find. And so I'm going to talk to him about wine culture in Los Angeles, rare bottles, where the hell to find them, and how the hell he finds them. Really, really, really interesting guy. So up on SOM TV right now, which is, let me make sure that people understand what this is. It is a streaming network, kind of like Netflix. It is a full OTT. It is available on all major devices. So yes, you can watch it on the web, but you can also watch it on your phone. You download the app, SOM TV, or Android, or your smart TV, or your Apple TV, or your Amazon Fire, or your Roku, and you can take it with you, download it for your, when it gets on the plane, all that kind of stuff. So it's pretty what you're used to with like the Netflix app or anything like that, where you can watch it pretty much anywhere and pick up anywhere you go and all those kinds of things. Here's what we have up right now. We have a bunch of the tastings from SOM 1. So when the guys do their tastings with the masters and all those kind of things.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Is this the most ready you've ever been in your career?
Definitely.
Definitely?
Definitely.
Like you mean it?
Absolutely.
All right, we're about to find out.
We have a series called Blind Tasting Sessions, which is a new thing where people sit down and they blind taste each other.
So I can't get out of my head that you're trying to serve me California wine, but, and I guess it could be potentially a California wine, so, because I feel really strongly that this is Old Riesling.
The premiere episode is with Brian, DeLynn, and Ian, filmed in Santa Barbara a while back, and it's pretty funny to see them get back together and blind taste. And then we have one with DeLynn, with somebody from The Wine Advocate. We have one with Kelly White and Dave Gibbs, who I'm about to interview later in this show. And it's just a very interesting thing. There are more episodes coming next week as well. We also have a show called Wine is Beautiful, which is really simple. It is essentially a collection of all the beautiful wine region stuff that we have shot over the years from the major, most important wine regions. And this is kind of designed for if you own a wine bar with a TV or a tasting room, or you want to just kick back and relax while you're studying, or put something on your television that is pretty and calming. That's what this is. And so we have a bunch up right now, including some from France, the United States. I have Southwest England coming next week, and many, many more. So I hope you guys enjoy this as much as I have. I didn't expect, but I actually find myself using it to sort of just relax. It's a very strange thing. We also have a show called Verticals. Verticals is right now our flagship show, and we have many more coming, so don't worry. But it is a show that is similar to Into the Bottle, where we use rare and interesting bottles of wine to tell the story of wine and people involved in it. But in this case, it all takes place at a single winery. And so our premiere episode is up. It is with Lagere Meredith Winery, and you may remember Carol Meredith from Into the Bottle.
Can there be any other business where there's so much bullshit?
We have many more coming. And I believe, and please do not quote me on this, but I believe Chapelet Winery in Napa will be next. We have Schramsberg coming. We have Mathiasen Winery. We have Kathy Corison. We have a stupendous one coming with Ridge Vineyards, which is just, I cannot wait for this to be complete. And so that's all coming up. We also have trailers for some of the things that are coming soon. Among those is Cellar Stories, which traces bottles through how the hell they got where they are. Goes through wars and counterfeiting and all sorts of stuff. It's a really fun series. We have one called The Exam. And the first season, we are working hard to get it up there. It will follow Ian Cauble through the Master Sommelier Exam. And I know that doesn't sound very original, but this is all footage you have not seen. And this is a multi-part series, and that's only season one. Season two will be a different exam in the food and beverage world, and season three as well. And I am unable to tell you which exams we're going to cover, but I can tell you it's going to be fun. So go to SOMTV.com, start streaming everything, and, you know, give us your feedback. We want to hear what you think about, you know, what's up there. We want to hear what you want to see up there. And I promise you we have quite a bit coming. We are filming our first masterclass next week, which is very exciting. And one of the other things with SOM TV is when we film these masterclasses and have events and things where we need audiences, It's open to our members. Unfortunately, this one sold out. It's free, but it's sold out in like 2 seconds. It's a masterclass on champagne with Master Sommelier Laura Manick. But we have another one coming up also in Los Angeles on the 25th with Jay Fletcher, who you may remember from our previous podcast, and then many more are scheduled. So we will be sending emails out in regards to where those masterclasses are filmed and whether, you know, if you can attend and things like that. Now on to my interview with Dave Gibbs, who sourced bottles for our upcoming Chapelet and Schramsberg episode of Verticals. I am sitting here with Dave Gibbs, who is the owner of Augustine Wine Bar in Los Angeles, pretty close to my house. Before I let you speak, I want to just say, I have little kids, and my wife and I don't have a lot of opportunities to get out. And so we kind of were looking for places that were close to our house to go and be adults. And this wine bar, Augustine Wine Bar, opened up really near our house. And this place kind of changed me as a wine drinker. Now you and I have a relationship, and you have done incredible things for SOMTV. Let's start with Los Angeles. What is the wine culture here in Los Angeles like?
I think the wine culture here in Los Angeles is like Los Angeles itself. It's tons of influences from different places all coming together and doing their own thing. There's not one set way of looking at wine because it comes from so many different cultures and backgrounds, as opposed to East Coast places or even San Francisco, where it's a predominantly a European background.
Well, when we made, so there's a reason Somm and Somm 3 and all these films that take place in New York and San Fran. You know, New York is enormous, but it's still concentrated in its little boroughs and things. And San Francisco is very concentrated. You can get from place to place pretty easily, but the wine scenes in those places are legendary. Los Angeles, I'm trying to think if we have filmed anything besides inserts for any of our movies here, because this place is like 8 cities. It's so sprawled out.
It is. I mean, it is sprawled out. It changes. It's very fluid and transient. People come here for a little while. They stay. Some don't. I live here, and I have 2 kids. But both my wife and I are from the East Coast. And at first, I remember, you know, when you'd see a native Angeleno, it was like a unicorn sighting, like, wow, you were born in the valley or whatever. And I still love that. And now I'm like, oh, my kids are, you know, they're going to be Dodger fans.
I don't know how I feel about them being Dodgers fans. As being from Cleveland, my kids are going to be Indians fans, and that's that.
Oh, I'm a Braves fan, but that's a completely different story. So it doesn't even make any sense. But
all right, I want to talk about Augustine, because what I really want to talk to you about is how and what you were able to do for us on these episodes we have coming up on SOMTV, which I think is miraculous. So many people, there's a lot of different opinions about old wine, but there's one thing that's a fact. It is hard to find in good condition. And a lot of it just gets rarer and rarer because many bottles weren't meant to be saved or not thought of as being saved. And your restaurant wine bar is unique for a certain reason. Why is that? Why am I talking to you?
Well, I think probably what set us apart from some other places, and there are lots of great places to drink great wine all over the world, and especially in Los Angeles. What we tried to do when we opened it was make the entry barrier a little lower. So if you wanted to go in and taste something old, you didn't have to commit to buying a bottle from a deep bottle list. You could get it by the glass. That was the primary, the spark that started Augustine. Was like, wouldn't it be cool if there's a place you could just go get a glass of something old and see if you like it? Because it's an acquired taste. Some people won't necessarily love something that you may or I might. But we give you the option of it without necessarily breaking the bank.
So essentially, anybody can come to this place and you have a board every day of old wines that you're going to open up by the glass. Like I see a 1984 Diamond Creek. You have 1955 Barolo.
Well, those are actually, that's the by the bottle. We have specials by the bottle over there. To the left of that are the vintage by the glass ones that we had open last night. Monday is going to be a slow night. So there's, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
It's pretty yeah. Incredible. I mean, you can come in here and get a glass of Barbaresco from 65, I see. Yeah. That was last night.
It's not inexpensive, but it's not expensive. I mean, you can try it and see, like, maybe I'd like to find out what a 54-year-old, you know, Italian red's gonna taste like without committing to a whole bottle.
Well, okay. So the reason I am talking to you and the reason, I mean, I think people who've seen my films realize I'm obsessed with old wine. And there's a couple reasons. And one is it always comes with a story. You've always got the who made it, who did it, where it came from. But then you also have this, where has it gone on its journey to get opened by us? And in this case, you. And so that's why I sort of became addicted to coming to this place and became friends with you. So when we started this show we have called Verticals, which is coming out on SOM TV, which tells the story of a winery through their great and sometimes difficult vintages, I went to a lot of these wineries and I said, I would like to open this bottle. And they looked at me like, I don't have any. But one of those was Schramsberg. So Schramsberg is an episode coming up in this show. And I approached them about the 1969. And I'm not really spoiling much about the episode. I mean, I guess I am, but it's not like there's a twist ending or anything. One of the bottles we open up in that episode is a 1969 American sparkling wine from Schramsberg. They're Blanc de Blancs. And that bottle was brought by Nixon to China during the Toast to Peace. And it's really remarkable in the episode for what that did. It's one of the major events in American wine, kind of a la the Judgment of Paris or the end of Prohibition or Mondavi starting his winery. It's that important, in my opinion. But I asked them for the 69, and they looked at me like, there are no 69s. Like, that is not a bottle that exists. So naturally, I didn't know who else to ask but you. And you had a 1969 Schramsberg, which no one has.
The White House still does.
Okay, well, the White House has that bottle. Okay, my question is multifold, but where the hell did you get this bottle, and how do you consistently get these kinds of bottles?
It's getting much harder to do that. Even in just the 5 years that we've been open, a lot of people, a lot of different places have started vintage by the glass programs, and that's great. I think it's fantastic for more people to have the opportunity to drink those things. It makes our life a little more complicated here because there was a time, especially going back to way before Augustine, when a certain type of wine, like largely older California wines, and especially older California whites or sparklings or things like that, were just considered throwaways, and they would always be a mixed case assortment at the very end of an auction. The last thing, we have a mixed case of, you know, California whites from the 60s. Start the bidding at $40. And I'd be like, I'll do it, I'll take it. And there were some hits and misses, but I was able to stockpile quite a few of those back in the days when no one was looking for those. And then competition got a little heavier right now. As far as this particular bottle is concerned, it's kind of a goofy story. A little bit of bad parenting.
The 69 Schramsberg. Okay.
Yeah. I always scan everything. Like, I'll just look for on the internet, on everything, for estate sales, auctions, all sorts of things. And this was a case where I can't remember what I was looking for, but I was looking for something on Craigslist, and it said wine, you know, old wine, box of old wine popped up. And I wrote to the person, I wrote back. And it was this, someone answered, and I was like, yeah, I'd love to come out and check out and see what you have. And then I went to write back again, and the post had, it said post expired or deleted, whatever. So I was like, whatever. Cut to a year later, I get a random email from this person, who turned out to be a young lady, saying like, hey, I just came across this. I'm so sorry it got sent to my spam. I still have that old wine if you're interested. And it was a year later, and I was like, okay, sure. Yeah, let me see if I can come out. So interestingly enough, I was with Matthew Kaner, one of my partners here at Augustine, and my son, who was one or two at the time. So we drove in a car, and my son's asleep in the back, and we kept driving, and it was in Venice. But it wasn't in a great part of Venice. There's still some parts that are a little bit less awesome than others. And as we kept driving down the street, Matthew looked at me, he's like, are you sure you want to do this? I mean, we have Ben. And I was like, yeah, it's probably not a smart choice. But we found the place, and it was just a dirt, you know, no grass, just kind of closed on the sidewalk. And I really thought about it, and I was like, maybe this is stupid, but I'm here. So I wake up Ben, and I've got him with me, and we go to knock on the door, and we just hear like this crazy dogs barking and all sorts of stuff. And I'm like, you know what, bad choice. Let's go back to the car. This is a dumb idea. And we hear, wait, hold on, I'm coming. And the door opens up, and it's this young lady and her boyfriend, and they were just swimming in the back, and they seem like kind of surfer dude people, super nice. The dog is tiny. I don't know what I was afraid of. And we get the story for him. The guy's brother had been doing some plumbing work in a house in Beverly Hills, and he was down in the basement, and he ran across a whole bunch of wine, and the woman that owned it said, like, oh, you can just take that. So he just put it in boxes and he was giving it away, and they had a little 50-bottle wine cooler, something like that, in the kitchen of this house they were renting, so they stashed it in there and didn't know what it was. And they asked if I'd be interested in buying it, and the first bottle that I pulled out was that Schramsberg. That was, like, the very first one, and I was like, ooh, I want this. Like, I just knew that I wanted it. And I'd read about it not that long before, so I didn't know. I was like, is it the 69? Yeah, that's the vintage. I think that's the vintage. And I always look for those vintages because that's my brother's birth year and a good friend of mine's birth year. So I'll always kind of be on the lookout for certain vintages. And we ended up buying a bunch of wine. Matthew bought some, I bought some, and that was one of the bottles, and it just sat there. And then I got home and I looked it up. I was like, yep, that's the one I wanted. And I kind of put it aside in my, like an offsite storage, and someday I'm gonna have a reason to drink this. And that was the only thing I remembered. It was like, someday I'll have a reason or someone will want this bottle. And it was you. And I was like, well, great. I mean, it's like, it's been sitting there. And if you can take it up there and share it with them, fantastic.
Well, Hugh Davies opens it to tell the story of his family and their involvement with that vintage and Nixon and everything. And I mean, it's fantastic. But I couldn't have done that without you having this bottle. Another bottle you found, because we filmed at Chapelet, and just a little bit of background, Chapelet, if you don't know Chapelet, you should. It's one of the more beautiful wineries probably in the world, let alone in Napa. And Molly Chapelet and Don Chapelet were a couple, and they bought this land. They moved from LA. And there was a lot of Chenin Blanc up there. And Molly fell in love with this Chenin. And we tell the story of a family that is still the same family that runs this place. And Chenin was Molly's thing. And Don has since passed away, but the film starts with opening the 1974 Chenin Blanc. Well, they don't have any old Chenin anymore. Nobody does. Why would you save it? It wouldn't be in somebody's consciousness to do that. So what did I do? I asked you, do you have any old Chenin Blanc? And your answer was, not only do I, but I've had this particular wine. Let's talk about and I think this is also a story about how California whites can age.
That bottle to me and Matthew and Dustin and Nick Caballaro, the manager here and my partner at Mirabel, it's a wine we all love. And we went to a house shortly after we'd opened, a person came in here and said, hey, my dad used to collect wine. He died years ago, he's got tons of it. Would you be interested in that? So we did, we went up and we looked through it, and there was an entire case of the 1974 Chapelet, but it didn't say Chapelet on it. It just says Pritchard Hill, but it's the same font. And I was like, I think this looks like the Chapelet label. And we brought it back and we Googled it, and it was. And we opened a bottle just to see how it was, and it was just stunning. I mean, and that would always be a bottle we'd pull out when someone was here that we wanted to impress, or someone that's like, oh, California wines don't age, or California whites in particular. I was like, well, really try this and tell us how old you think it is. And it always kind of blew people away. And then we realized we don't have that many left. We've given them away. And so when you were going up there, I was like, oh, you gotta give this to Molly. And those bottles, when they're on, they're just stunning. It's a beautiful, beautiful version of that grape.
I want to just talk a little bit more about Molly Chapelet for 1 second, because it is one of the more pleasurable days of filming I've ever had. And I've had some extreme experiences in the wine business, food too, but wine especially. Molly is this wonderful, wonderful kind of a sage. Somebody who, at least in the episode, and I believe in life as well, looks at life and parenting and friendship and growing a vineyard like a garden. And, you know, you kind of get back what you give in, and you can't stop working. There is no end to loving something and working something. And I will tell you, when I left, and I am very much looking forward to people seeing this episode, because it is a really, really incredible portrait of a successful American family. But yet you could feel like they are a family down the street from yours. You know, they just live on a prettier property than you. But it was really miraculous. And when we poured that 74 Chenin for Molly, and she opens it up and drinks it with her son, Dominic, who's the youngest, it's very emotional. It's an emotional scene. But aside from that and what's on screen, the wine was stupendous, just truly great.
It's a great bottle of wine. It really is.
Yeah.
The guy that owned it, is a guy named David Rose, who's a famous composer in the film industry here. He did music you'd know. He wrote The Stripper, and he wrote Holiday for Strings, but he also he did Bonanza and Little House on the Prairie, and he did the Red Skelton Show for 28 years. And he was sort of Henry Mancini's mentor. And Mancini mentions him in his book. He's like, David Rose really taught me about the good life, which was a theory also that Mondavi had. Martin Ray took down from Paul Masson about everything in moderation, and you should be able to enjoy certain things. But David Rose collected wine. He was an early investor in Chalon, and he loved Chapelet. And his wife, I think, knew Molly, and they had this signed case, which I think we have the box someplace. But
amazing,
it was just a cool thing.
Incredible stuff. Let's talk about you as where you came from in your previous life. Now you own restaurants and you pour wine, and you're a businessman and entrepreneur. But you were in a band.
Yes.
Many bands, actually, probably, but most famous for.
I was in a band from Boston called the Gigolo Ants, or Aunts, if you're from Connecticut. And we were a moderately successful kind of local band around Boston. And we got kind of swept up in like the sort of grunge movement of the late 80s, early 90s. We had the same manager as Nirvana and the same booking agent and big labels. And we got to do some really fun things. But basically, we were four guys that grew up together in upstate New York. We all knew each other. We were best friends. And for us, it was more a matter of we loved making music and playing music, and we were just fortunate enough to get paid to do that around the world. And it was just super fun. It was a great way. It was a fantastic way to spend my 20s and 30s. I just loved every second of it.
Well, we do, for Some TV, we do a blind tasting with you and Kelly. You guys, and I know you haven't seen that yet, but Kelly.
I'm dreading watching because I know my blind tasting skills are shit. So.
Yeah, well, the point of it is not a win-win, but it is. It's more entertainment than anything. But Kelly was pretty. I mean, she said many times how famous this band was. And when she was in high school, I believe.
I think the people that liked us a great deal. And the other people had never really heard of us. We were just sort of like also-rans. But we were more probably infamous for all the bands that opened for us that liked us a lot went on to be slightly more successful.
Like who?
Counting Crows would be a good example. You know, I know Adam very well, and I know him because his band opened for our band. And then he returned the favor dozens and hundreds of times. But we toured with a lot of bands that went on to be super successful, the Cranberries and just a bunch of bands. And then we were fortunate, we got to write quite a few songs for TV shows and films and commercials and things like that, and that sort of paid the rent for a long time. And then we moved to Los Angeles individually, not as a band. And when I was here, I struck up a friendship with Tom Morello, who's just a great human and also a wine lover. Tom is the guitar player in Rage Against the Machine. He does solo projects. He's an activist and just a great human. He's an inspirational dude. But from traveling with the Gigolo Ants and with other bands that I played with over time, we got to go to a bunch of different places in the world and drink a lot of different wine. And this thing, you love old wine, I love old wine. Augustine has a deep love of and appreciation of old wine. But it was never a huge financial burden to, it was a hobby you could get into relatively cheap. You know,
drinking old wine, or just drinking
20 or 30 years ago. You know, we could go out to dinner in Spain and drink a Lopez de Heredia Tandonia 1954 and spend the equivalent of $25. You know, and it wasn't like we're gonna jump in $800 worth now to try an old bottle of wine. For years and years, it was, you know, it's like anything else. The same thing with guitars and stuff. Before grunge, before Nirvana, old guitars were old guitars. Then they became vintage guitars. And before 10 or 15 years ago, old wine was old wine. And then it was collectible vintage. I mean, there were always the blue chips, obviously.
Your Bordeaux.
Your first growth Bordeaux and your crazy blue chip Burgundies. But everything else was sort of affordable. Even when you look at, I'm sort of obsessed with old wine writings and catalogs and auction catalogs. You can look at the prices of these wines and you're like, well, how did people afford that back? Well, how would this guy have this kind of wine back there? DRC and first growths and all sorts of crazy bottles.
Which are now thousands of dollars a bottle.
But they weren't back then.
Right.
You know, and even when they were old, they were just old. You look at auction catalogs from the 80s, the 90s, and you can find, you know, really old Burgundy, really old 19th century Bordeaux in the 80s selling for $25, $30, maybe $40 a bottle. So it wasn't as prohibitively expensive to get into the hobby back then. And they were still floating around Europe, especially things that were no one wanted. Old Riesling, which I happen to love, or old Spanish whites. Nobody cared about those wines. I was like, I think these are fascinating.
So that kind of led you to open up this wine bar that's focused on old wines, potentially, in the long term?
I had a lot of them, and I put them in storage for, sadly, one of the interesting stories is a bunch of old Spanish whites I sent home to my parents, because they live in upstate New York, and they have a basement, and it's always cool. It's just never above maybe 62. It's always just cool and damp in that basement. And I sent tons of wines. When we opened here, they sent some out to me. And they'd all, the one thing I forgot about my parents is they're of a generation where they store everything with mothballs. So like everything was corked and terrible. But what are you gonna do?
Oh geez, that's too bad.
That's kind of a bummer. But anyway, I had a lot of old wine, and at one point my wife was like, what are you gonna do with all those things? I was like, maybe I'll open a wine bar. And she was like, really? I was like, yes. And Matthew and Dustin, my partners here, had already opened Covell, which was hugely influential in the whole LA wine scene, not just in my, you know, life as a wine drinker and collector. And I kept bugging them about it. And they said, why don't you do it and we'll partner with you and show you how to run it. And they did, and it just kind of all worked out.
So if you're in LA listening to this, it's a simple question. How do you drink old wine? Well, come to Augustine, you can do it by the glass or by the bottle, whatever, easy. But how does, for the 99.9% of the rest of the people that would listen to this, where do you find old wine if you want to try to drink it?
At first it came from, a lot of it from Europe and stuff, and things from Boston and places that I'd picked up on the road. And I would just keep it with me. And again, in the pre-9/11
days. So old wine is in most of these cities?
Yes. I mean, it's always there. And it's also in unlikely places. There were a bunch of things, like groups, like wine and food societies. And they took hold in certain cities. Houston was one of them. Birmingham, Alabama. Atlanta. There were, and if you read the old Harry Waugh books, all of those Diary of a Wine Taster books, volumes 1 through 9, you can get those all on eBay or on, maybe even used on Amazon for next to nothing. And they are the best wine books you can read. And he'll talk about, he just kept diaries, and he would go to these luncheon meetings. He'd get flown here and there to do these meetings in the 50s and 60s and 70s and 80s. And they're in odd cities, but they would all have collectors because groups of people would get together, they'd all pay dues, and one guy would buy wine for them. Again, when it wasn't super unaffordable. And they'd probably be businessmen or doctors or lawyers or whatever they were, but there were teachers and other people in it. And those cellars are still out there. People got older, they died. In fact, we bought one here, one of my favorite cellars. They just happened to store it in the same offsite we did, was from a club in Pasadena. And they had bought things on release and never moved it from storage. So it had shipped there on release, and it just sat there in a cold, dark locker for decades. And then when you touch them, it's like you're the first person to kind of see them again after a long time, and chances are you've at least had the storage conditions optimum for, you're at least stacking the odds that you might have a good drinkable bottle.
Well, so a lot of people maybe listening, their parents or grandparents or whatever have maybe some old bottles of wine in a cupboard, in a basement, in something. How can they tell if these are worth opening, worth selling? What's your advice to somebody who finds some of these old bottles besides to sell them to you?
Well, sell them to me. Call me up. I'll go anywhere to look for an old bottle of wine. I enjoy the hunt. I really do. I love it. I love the stories. I like meeting the people that had it. Why did they have it? Was it given to them? All sorts of stories. I'm kind of a voyeur that way. The problem is a lot of those things, people tend to store them in the same places, which are always the worst places, like in a cabinet above the refrigerator in the kitchen, or above the stove, or by the fireplace. I don't think as much thought is given about...
That's an American thing. Yeah.
The majority of wine is meant to be consumed that evening. Buy it in the store on the way home, drink it with dinner. That's 99% of the wine in the world.
Right.
Anything can be stored. Like the best example of anything, if you want to get into a wine, go to Tampa, Florida. Go to Burns. Drink those wines that were
Burns Steakhouse.
Burns Steakhouse, yeah. And they'll pull out wines that's unbelievable because there are wines that weren't meant to be stored. A domestic Gamay from 1969 or 71. We have some here actually, Joe Swan. And you'll be like, no, this was meant to be consumed in 1972.
And yet it ages.
And it aged gracefully and beautifully because it was cold and dark and it never moved and it wasn't touched. And so.
Where are some other places in the country you can get some good old wine?
If you're just sitting around, you can always do it through auction houses, you know, and you're really rolling the dice because online auction houses aren't like going to an auction where you develop a relationship with the house that's auctioning it. And if you spend enough money there over time and you say, hey, by the way, you know, these lots I got were cooked or corked or whatever, they will work with you because they know you're gonna come back. Whereas when it's an online situation like WineBid or Spectrum Wine Auctions or Heritage, they're all great companies. They wanna do right by you, but they're houses for somebody else's wine, so they can't take full responsibility.
It's all consignment.
Yeah. And the thing about those places are you get some hits and you get some misses.
So basically,
we've had great success with those, and we've also had terrible failures with those. You know, everybody has. But if you want to try it for yourself and you're sitting at home, go on WineBid, set up an account, and you know, start looking. Set your filter to oldest vintage first, and just scroll through something that catches your eye that's in a price range that you feel comfortable completely risking.
Like basically, if it's garbage, yeah. You're throwing your money away.
Yeah. I mean, there's no recourse, but it's the other thing is before you do that, maybe decide whether or not read about it. If you're looking for a certain profile, it's not going to be for you. But if you think this might be something I'm interested in, try it. That's what I, you know, we have that conversation. It's a delicate conversation when people come to the bar to order something and they want to try that 1965 Barbaresco and they're looking down at the board and that's the priciest glass on there. And maybe in their head, if they're not familiar with old wines, they might think, well, it's the most expensive glass, therefore it's the best. And who knows what the best means? Maybe they think the best is a wine like a big Paso blend, you know, rich and full and clobber you in the face with fruit. If that's what they think the best is, then this will disappoint them.
Right,
and,
interesting.
And not, you know, that big Paso jammy wine might be fantastic, but it also might, you know, it'll have nothing in common with this delicate, feminine, older wine where you've got tertiary flavors and.
So the problem is you have to do your research no matter what. Any field in the world where you want inside knowledge, you have to do your research and you have to do it. But that's a lot of good intel. I want to ask you, what's something old and what's something new you've had recently that really blew you away that you want to mention?
I can tell you one right now. I went to dinner with Nick Caballaro, my partner at Mirabelle and our manager here at Matthew Kaner, one of my other partners here, had a restaurant called Good Measure, and we went. And Nick brought a bottle of St. Clement, a Napa winery. He brought a multi-vintage bottle. It was 75 and 76. And I think 76 is their first commercial vintage. So this was a blend of 75 and 76. And you know, 75 is a hot year and 76 and 77 are both drought years. But this was their first release. It was, I think, about 13%, and it just blew us all away. It kept getting better and better and better. It was dark, it was rich, very Bordeaux-like. It wasn't flamboyant at all or showy. It had that weird, you know, old school Napa rusticness to it, but it was just beautiful. And it was everything that I like in old wine. It was a cool story. It was intellectually interesting, and it was also just pleasurable. It would just tasted nice, you know, like, wow, that just tastes good. Even if you don't like old wine, you would enjoy this. It's not something where I'd have to convince you, like when, if you're listening to some super esoteric free jazz piece, where I'm like, no, listen to this. Listen to how he's coming in here, this counterpoint right here. And you're like, okay, I hear it. I don't really like it, but I can appreciate it. This was something that just tasted great. It just like, that fires on all cylinders.
It's great. What about something new?
Something new, it's the summertime and I drink a lot of whites and lighter bodied things. The Liquid Farm Rosé, I love. Can't get enough of it. Drink it all the time. Sit around by my pool and I drink it.
Liquid Farm Rosé.
Yeah, and maybe the Lael Blueprint Sauv Blanc. I could drink a lot of that. Robin Lael, John Daniels from Inglenook's daughter.
This is great. Well, I have a bunch more stuff we can't talk about on this podcast, but we will in the future coming with you for the myriad of insanity coming on SOM TV. So you will not be leaving my life soon. And
thank you very much.
I cannot thank you enough, Dave. This is It's been a lot of fun to drink with you over the years. And
well,
lot,
I appreciate that. And I hope to see you in here again. We're going to open that 41, that little half bottle I showed you before. So
yeah, we'll talk about that one. That one's going to be a big one. And then if you guys go to L.A., you need to stop by Augustine Wine Bar and have a glass of old wine. If you don't, you need to go into your grandfather's and mother's cellars and take a look, or just in the basement, or God forbid the closet above the stove or whatever, and get those wines and see if they're any good. Everybody, thank you so, so much for listening. And thank you everyone who has subscribed or is thinking about subscribing or has passed the word along about SOMTV. Go to SOMTV.com. We have no sponsor. It's just SOMTV. So go to SOMTV.com. And if you want to start watching all of our content, it's there. It's started. We are there. And I will never sleep again. All right. We will talk very soon.